to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 638. Me llamo Lisa Sheps, and I'm here along with my super duper co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You were listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this puppy live at KOOP.org. Stick around. We got lots to talk about.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right.
It is Wednesday, October 13th, 2021. On the show today, we have the new Manifest Theater Company and their Minifest Play Series. And of course, Nicole and I will have lively discussions of the world of theater in New York, Chicago, Houston, Austin, Dallas, San Antonio. And this is our Texas edition. Stick with us.
When you know, lack it measure out
of anything,
for everything was there.
For everything was there. Yep. That little ditty was called Bergerac, from the musical Cyrano de Bergerac in 1973. And we're going to talk about that in just a second, but I want to thank Kim Simpson, another wonderful international folk bazaar. I had so much fun listening to his show today.
Always have fun with that Kim Simpson.
We do. I don't know if you heard the very beginning of his show, or like, no, I'm guessing it's halfway. There was some song in some language that at one point it just kept getting faster and faster and faster, and it made me smile.
Isn't that great when music can do that?
Yeah, so I had so much
music
fun.
Music is a universal language.
Yep. So I played that little piece from Cyrano the Musical because, you know, there's another Cyrano the Musical that just happened a few years ago prior to the pandemic, starring one Peter Dinklage. And
there's not enough Cyrano musicals.
I know this is the third one, actually.
I know. That's why I'm laughing.
Yeah, it's the third one. There is no track for it. So that's why I play the 1973 version. But, you know, I was a little on the fence about the idea of the film version of Cyrano that Peter Dinklage is doing slash has done. Did you happen to watch the trailer?
No, I did not.
Worth watching.
Really good, because you're like, I was, and you say that as was as past tense.
Looks good. And of course, we've talked about the musical before. It was produced by his wife, and I forgot her name, so I'm sorry. But instead of a long-nosed Cyrano, it is a little person Cyrano. So it's about his physical stature in this case. But the trailer looks good, Nicole.
Well, I'm going to have to go check it out. I do love Peter Dinklage.
It's hard not to.
He hasn't done anything that has made me upset or dislike him at all.
All right. Well, the musical number, so they're, you know, they show.
You know, he's Ford in Jersey too, so we love.
Well,
him
who isn't?
More.
Yeah, we'll fist pump him later.
In the same month as Nicole. So come on now, how do you not?
Nicole Shiro or Nicole Morosis?
Nicole Shiro.
Okay, I wasn't sure which Nicole you were speaking of. I don't hear you talking about yourself in the third person very often.
Well, I am today. His wife would be one Erica Schmidt, if you were wondering.
I was wondering. Thank you for looking that up. And I forgot also the name of the woman that plays Roxanne. I didn't do a lot of homework here. I just saw the trailer and said, I'm going to talk about how much I love the trailer.
Oh, I'm going to pull it up here so I can watch it later on when we're off the air, because you've already enticed me to go see it.
Well, you know where you can find the link. You can find it at offstageonair.com. Once I post the show, which will be later this evening.
That's very exciting.
So we've had, you know, there are a slew of openings that have happened this past week. And Broadway,
yes, there
is, was. Yeah, Broadway and the New York City Theater, as well as the rest of the country, is coming back to life, and it's very exciting. But I have to tell you that I really enjoy the new Did They Like It website.
I've been on there playing on it. It's so easy to use, but I love the way it's not quite as dry anymore.
It is not nearly as dry.
It has a lot of life to it.
Yeah, and so for those that didn't see the Did He Like It website, it was basically pencil drawing cartoon in flavor, one color, and this new one is very colorful.
Very colorful, and very user-friendly.
Right, and so also with the original one, it was all based on Ben Brantley, and there was just one thumbs up or thumbs down. This one, in the title page, it shows three hands, one with thumbs up, one in the middle, and one thumbs down, and we're going to start...
With different color arm sleeves.
Say that again?
Different patterns and arm sleeves.
There's polka dots, there's some other kind of pattern, and then there's bigger polka dots, like cow, that looks like a cow.
Yeah, I think they're like gold, blue, and is it like a pink or a fuchsia, maybe, if I remember correctly?
So I was hoping to do these three in order, but I may have the wrong order. But we're going to start with Chicken and Biscuits. We talked about Chicken and Biscuits. It stars Norm Lewis, and it also has, oh my God, just forgot his name, but we'll come up with it when I look at the thing. It got two thumbs up, three neutral, and one thumbs down. So as everybody here knows that I read the New York Times, and I base everything I have on the Times. So we're going to talk about the Times review. And Jesse Green wrote this review, and it opened, when did it say it opened? Oh, darn it. October 9th.
I was like to say Saturday, right? Yeah. Saturday.
So
opening day.
One of the things that Jesse Green, I'm guessing he's one of the ones in the middle, he says, as I sat alternately laughing and cringing in the audience, I shouldn't have said as I sat because I'm not going to say anything past that. anyway, so he was alternately laughing and cringing. So this show, from what I heard on other things, and this is one of the things that we're going to talk about, the current realm of contemporary theater is usually thought-provoking, high-minded. There's very little like theater for the sake of entertainment. And in essence, it seems like Chicken and Biscuits is entertainment. That's why some of the people were not liking it, because it wasn't thought-provoking enough.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I mean, I get it, but yeah, no. Oh. I'm working in. Those are the wheels turning in my head.
Yeah, I don't agree with those people, but that is indeed the case.
If I'm rip roaring laughing, crying profusely, or deep in thought, or angry, it's still all entertainment to me. It's just different.
Absolutely. So here's here's what Chicken and the Biscuits is about. Rivaling sisters, and I'm reading this from the Did They Like It site. Rivaling sisters Benetta and Beverly are burying their father, but it's the nonstop family drama that might be the death of them. Beverly just wants to show the congregation that she's been blessed with. Benetta's husband tries to keep the family peace while preparing the eulogy. Benetta's youngest son brings his very white, very Jewish boyfriend, who is maybe, sort of, okay, definitely afraid of Benetta. Meanwhile, Beverly's daughter couldn't mind her own business if it was on a leash, but when the family secret reveals itself at the church altar, things really go crazy, and even Benetta can't deny the truth.
So I love that saying that she can't mind her own business even if it was on a leash. That I want to use that all the time. That
I do
is hilarious
too.
Euphemism.
I'm going to do that as well. So in keeping with the thought that I made about that high-minded theater these days, he says, quote, sidestepping the traffic of somber, formerly inventive new plays about Black life, Chicken and Biscuits eagerly boards the rickety old bus. So it's the trope is more old-timey sitcom than anything else. It's directed by Zaylon Livingston. And as I said, it has a Norm Lewis, and then the person I couldn't remember his name. You're going to laugh at me when Michael Urey is also in it.
I was about to say, hello, Texan man.
Yeah, my mind doesn't work very well. And then, so his quote about Michael Urey, who's playing a character named Logan, says he's a gay stereotype, so flittery he cannot follow the service. As he flips through the Bible, he asks, where's Corinthians? Is this in alphabetical order? I have to say, I might say that as well. I couldn't tell you where anything in the Bible is.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
So finally, he says at the very end, quote, Chicken and Biscuits is built on sensation, more like a musical or even an opera. In the long scene of the funeral itself, the eulogies by several family members function as arias, delivered in the old school park and bark style. They're not concerned with forwarding the action so much as bringing oral pleasure. And indeed, Lewis's satire of a preachy stem winder with drawn out vowels and pounced on syncopations is more than halfway to song, which one would expect from Norm Lewis.
I was just about to say, I mean, I think of Norm Lewis in that voice and presence on stage. It's just a master combo to me.
Yeah. Sounds like something I'd like to see.
I've been intrigued by it from the whole beginning.
Yeah, me too. So we agree. And the other one is Lackawanna Blues. Lackawanna Blues has all thumbs up all the way through. And this is by Ruben Santiago Hudson. It's a one-person show. It's autobiographical, talking about the woman who raised him. She owned two boarding houses. Her name is Miss Rachel, but they called her something else. Let me see if I can find it. I don't know. It opened Thursday night at the Manhattan Theater Club. And they call her Nanny. And they talk about, I just like this, they talk about some of the people that live in her boarding house, some of the names: Numb Finger Pete, Sweet Tooth Sam. There's also a pampered pet raccoon and a man who is sentenced to 25 years in jail for a double homicide. So Ruben Santiago Hudson plays at least 25 characters in it.
Yeah, that's kind of impressive.
This is not a new piece. It premiered off-Broadway at the Public Theater back in 2001. And it also had a HBO special or an HBO showing, which I need to take a look at it.
I didn't realize that.
It's
yeah,
not a one-person show. It's got an all-star cast, they say.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I may have to check that out. But what's interesting, and this is... one of the interesting things about theater today, you know, there's no longer an opening night where the critics come and they open on a Wednesday night and they stay at their typewriters all night so that they can post in the middle of the night for the next morning's edition. The press is invited the week prior to opening, and I'm using opening in quotes. I actually like, and maybe it's just because I'm old, I kind of like it the old way.
I'm on the same page.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that before. But what's interesting is the show did not open on opening night.
No, he had a back injury.
He
correct?
Had a
Is
back
that what
injury.
It was?
Yes. And I believe it's closed to this moment. It's going to. It's going to open.
Oh, I thought
again
he went back in.
October 12th. So yesterday it reopened.
Right.
So he was out for almost a whole week.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't have an understudy in a one-person show that's autobiographical, I guess.
Well, I suppose you could, but I think it would not be fair at this early stage of the game to people that bought tickets to see him do his piece. I mean, it wouldn't, right. If somebody else was doing it, it would no longer be autobiographical. It would be biographical.
That's why I'm saying, I was like, I guess it doesn't really work so well.
But they talk about, he talks about the musicality of this piece. Not only the musicality of Santiago Hudson's just timbre, but also there is music that comes in and the musicians that play a part, it's more like a conversation. And I just want to read this one paragraph in the review. It says, quote, "The very first instrument we learn to use is the human voice. In Lackawanna Blues, Santiago Hudson shows his expert prowess with his, which he uses to deliver music with his portrayal of the various personality. He strings together a cadence, tone, and rhythm into a piece of work that is equal parts narrative and song." I just think that says so much.
That's lovely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. That's lovely.
So it was originally scheduled to play through October 31st. It's been extended a week. So hopefully those people that had tickets for that first or for that week that he wasn't there can get
go in another time. Yeah.
So other reviews, which I forgot to share with you guys on with Chicken and Biscuits, but Charles Isherwood said, "Lackawanna Blues still gleams like a newly minted coin some 20 years after it was first produced."
That's pretty amazing. Wow.
And remember we said we have four "Did They Like It" critics. I'm going to include one each time. This is Bendatri Kudre. I've got to learn how to pronounce these names. They say the play with its 90-minute runtime is also a quick reminder, in case anyone still needs one, of the insidious ways in which anti-blackness forms the bedrock of American history. And Adam Feldman of Time Out.
That's interesting too.
Yep. And Adam Feldman of Time Out New York says it satisfies a hunger that Broadway seldom serves.
Oh, those are all really good pull quotes.
I know.
All of them. They intrigue me.
I know. It makes me want to see it.
Me too.
It makes me want to see it. And the final opening is this a room? Which, again, six thumbs up. And this is actually one of those things that where they read the transcript of a true story. And this is the story of Air Force Intelligence Specialist Reality Winner. That is her actual real name, Reality Winner. And she got surprised in her home by the FBI. She's accused with leaking evidence that the Russians hacked the 2016 election. It's all done as written with the actual transcript.
Yes, this is one we were supposed to have as part of the Texas Performing Arts season, but
right. I think you're right.
It got pulled off the season because they took it to the big stage, to the great wide world, to New York.
It opened last Monday at the Lyceum Theater. It's conceived and directed by Tina Satter. And this all happened in 2017 Augusta,
Georgia.
Isn't that
crazy that time's flown? It seems like it was a year and a half ago that this all went down, but it didn't.
No. She reportedly has the longest sentence ever imposed in a federal court for unauthorized release of government information to the media. She was sentenced to more than 5 years. She was just released a few months ago, I think.
I think you're right. I was like, I think she was just released not too long ago.
And what's interesting that they're doing at the Lyceum is going to another transcript-based play by Lucas Naith called Dana H. Opens next week, and it's going to run alternatively with Is This a Room? I think that's interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
Now, what I didn't understand in reading this review, and I suppose I can read a little further, the parts of the transcript that were redacted, they somehow handle that with lighting and staging that is somehow very unique. That's as much as I got out of it. So I don't know. So this is a four-person show with three FBI agents and reality. By the way, the lighting is by Thomas Dunn, and the sound is by Lee Kenny and Sine Yamada. And they call these having a lot of disorienting effects.
Interesting.
Yeah, very,
that
very
means
interesting.
Strobes.
Let's see what the other critics said. Matt Weinman of AM New York said, this is a disturbing and unexpectedly compelling 65-minute docudrama.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Greg Evans from Deadline said, the note perfect production simply leaves no space for extraneous imaginings, which I think is kind of interesting. I wouldn't necessarily think that's a good thing. I want extraneous imaginings.
So I went,
And the Did They Like It critic Christian Lewis said, it's a visionary work that will certainly help put documentary theater back on the map while also making us question what is even real.
I like that one.
I know. So we do have, let me check the time. Oh, we're doing all right. We do have a death, and that's Cynthia Harris, who is best known for playing the mother on Mad About You, which I didn't even realize. I actually got the pleasure of working with Cynthia Harris. She was in the original cast of Cloud Nine.
You did. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, which she had done long after. I believe she did four shows on Broadway long before the 70s. She did her Broadway debut in 1962. But she was mostly did TV shows and movies. She was also the artistic director and founding member of the Actors Company Theater, which was an off-Broadway collective founded in 1992 that calls itself a company of theater artists that reveals, reclaims, and reimagines great plays of literary merit.
Well, I like that too.
But what I remember of her, first of all, she was a very nice woman. In my workings with her, I was... I kind of worked on the crew of Cloud Nine, but I called myself an assistant stage manager, even though I really wasn't. By the way, I did. I was tapped to be the ASM for that show, directed by Tommy Tune. But the ASM also had to understudy, so I had to audition for Tommy Tune, and therein made it so I couldn't have the job.
Well, I mean, didn't you tell Tommy I'm a Texan and a Houstonian also?
Oh,
hire
sure,
me.
I'm sure I played all those things. but anyway, needless to say, I did not get the job. But as soon as the PSM was able to get me onto the show in some fashion, he did that. So.
Oh, that's cool.
This looks interesting. This is a show that's scheduled to open in February 8th at Pershing Square Signature Center. It's called Black No More. It is inspired.
Oh yeah, this is with what's his name from The Roots.
Yes, Tariq Trotter, aka Black Thought.
Yes.
So this
I'm intrigued by this one.
Yeah, so this is a musical with a book by John Ridley, who wrote 12 Years a Slave. It's inspired by George S. Schuller's 1931 novel of the same name. And this sounds so interesting. Oh, by the way, it opens January 11th, or plays January 11th.
Fascinated by this.
Yeah, opens in February. But it is, it's a satirical story, and it follows the development of a drug or something called Black No More, which is a scientific procedure for turning black skin white. And it starts
1931. This is just bananas when you think about this.
Yeah, I know. I know. And this is, it's the, hold on. I got to find the Trotter. Tariq Trotter, is, I guess he's also in it. Is that true?
I think he is. I think he is. From what I understood, he was. That's why I got even more
excited about it. Yeah, it's his theatrical debut. He plays Dr. Junus Crookman. And so that's pretty amazing. And the protagonist is a character named Max Disher, played by Brandon Victor Dixon.
What a great combination. I am really intrigued by this.
Yeah, I may have to go in to see this. It's directed by...
I mean, that's a powerhouse of talent.
Yep. It's directed by Scott Elliott. of the new group, and it's choreographed by Bill T. Jones. So it sounds like something that I would like to see. And the final thing
I want to talk
about in this section is the Funny Girl trailer. Did you happen to see that?
Well, it wasn't really a trailer to me unless they released a second one.
They called it a trailer, but
it was not a trailer. I was like, womp womp.
Well, they
really
called it a trailer, but it's exciting. And Beanie Feldstein looks good in it to me.
She looks good in it, but it didn't seem like a trailer to me. And I was like,
well,
that's what
about
gave
it
us?
Didn't seem like a trailer to you? I'm sorry. Or maybe it's something different,
because
what I saw looked like a trailer.
Maybe it's something different. It was just her walking on stage and lights going on and saying, hello, gorgeous, and
yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, that's what it was. But it's still, it
yeah,
looks
that
good.
Wasn't a trailer. That was just
I call it a trailer. But you know, we can agree to disagree on that. We do that a lot. But anyway, it looks good. I'm excited to see it. That's all.
I like her.
I like her as well, but I've been watching her in that, and we really don't have time to talk about it, but I've been watching her in that Monica Lewinsky thing, and which I don't like at all. But she's quite busy these days.
She is extremely busy these days. Do you not like her in it, or do you just not like the American crime?
I don't like the American crime story thing, and I'm torn, because I also don't like Sarah Paulson in it, but I don't know if it's just because that character is so despicable. Of Linda Tripp.
Oh, Linda Tripp, I know.
So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know whether it's her performance or the character, but anyway. And also Monica.
There was a great interview with Beanie Feldman, I think it was in the Times, recently, that she was talking about playing Monica, but also about playing Fanny Bryce. But it was really interesting in the relationship that she's had with Monica and the relationship she feels towards Fanny. It was a very fact. I think it was the New York Times. I'll have to find it and send it to you, but it was a really good read.
Awesome. I'd love to see it. We could put it in the show notes. But we have to take a break right now, so let's go out with listening from the original Funny Girl, If a Girl Isn't Pretty. We'll be right back.
If a girl isn't pretty like a Miss Atlantic.
This is Stephen Mills, Artistic Director of Ballet Austin. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
We are back. You are, as Stephen Mills just said, listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP. Nicole has exited the telephone, but you're listening to this with both of us, even though she's not here. So we're going to go right to our first interview. I recorded this, I believe, 2 days ago. With Simone Alexander, the New Manifest Theater, one of the premier theaters here in Austin, and also one of the newest theaters. But they have this is their third annual mini-fest, which starts tonight. And let's listen to that interview right now. Oh my God, I'm so happy. Here in the Zoom room are two of my favorite people. One, of course, is Nicole Shiro. And then also here in the Zoom room is Simone Alexander, who wears so many hats in this Austin theater scene. But the hat she's wearing right now is the founder, and I believe the title is Producing Artistic Director of New Manifest Theater. Hi, Simone.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Simone.
You're welcome. And actually, that is a song I think Nicole just made up.
Love it.
So New Manifest Theater is about to go to their, I think this is your third mini fest. Is that correct?
That is our third annual short play festival, Manifest Mini Fest.
Cool. So tell folks what the short play.
That's a fun name to say. Manifest Mini Fest.
Totally.
Tell people what it is, generally speaking.
Yeah. So, we really started our short play festival, our first season, really out of the love of the process of collaborating with playwrights and wanting to do that with, you know, multiple playwrights in this kind of festival layout. So this is our third year. We're producing four playwrights, some local, some national. We've been lucky to have a lot of submissions in the past that are even international playwrights. So we're always looking for uniquely diverse plays that complement each other, but also highlight a vast variety of people and genres and things like that.
Awesome. Well, certainly in the past years, it's been wonderful. Can you define for us what you mean by short? Is there a specific time limit?
Yeah, normally we're going for 20 minutes or less. Our maximum length is probably around 20 minutes. And then from there, everything is like, you know, 10 minutes, stuff like that.
Okay. So obviously last year was virtual. This year is also going to be virtual?
That's correct. Last year, because it was really, I mean, we're still obviously in the pandemic, but last year we were way more cautious where everybody submitted their videos. So it was all virtual. Nobody was meeting in person. This year we have the luxury of being, you know, a little bit more healthy. People are vaccinated, people can wear masks. So we've been able to film the plays in person with the actors and the directors. And even that little bit of in-person has been so fulfilling, just like getting back into the theater. Thank goodness we're at Ground Floor Theater being able to film, and it's such a wonderful space to be in.
It is indeed. And I was just really thrilled. Last week we shot one of the pieces, and it looks just really great.
It really, really does. And the directors have, you know, the ability to switch between cameras, which really makes them feel like they have, you know, editing power in the room while watching their piece happen.
So tell me, do you have any highlights for this year's? You said you're highlighting four. What is your favorite one?
No.
I'm teasing. Man. You do not have to answer that.
I don't even know how to see that. Yeah.
Screenshot of your face, like, how? Yeah. What?
Totally, yeah. Don't have to answer that. We know you love all your children equally. So do you have some highlights to tell us about one or all of them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I can definitely say that all of the plays have, you know, their moment to shine, which I think is great. Something I would like to say about the festival as a whole is last year we started offering artist panels, and we did that again this year, which is just part of our ever-growing mission to also include professional development for artists as part of our programming. So this year we have two artist panels. One will be cultivating creative inclusive spaces. The other one is focused on solo shows from the page to the stage. And then we'll also be rebroadcasting two of our panels from last year, a playwriting panel and then an early career producing panel.
Wonderful. And I will tell folks that they can get information on your website, which is newmanifest.org. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
But if you want details about the pieces, you need to click the ticket link, and you can get all the information by clicking the ticket link. Tell us about some of the shows.
Yeah, so we have four shows, like I said. They all, I think, highlight very different things, but a lot of them you know, are very culturally specific about issues that we're dealing with, but dealing with in those specific communities. So we have a piece called Fresh Rotted Grass, which talks about, you know, the Uruguayan war effects. We have a piece called Twitter Feed, which is about Asian American violence and how the Asian American community handles those issues in real time. We also have a piece called The Principal's Office, which, you know, goes through the difficult conversations that parents and administrators of schools handle together. And then finally, we have a happy, happy comedy called Love is a Roller Coaster about, you know, the complexities of love.
I don't know anything about that. I was happy to see Twitter feed is written by Sandy Lam. And I just have to just throw out there that Sandy Lam and her company had one of her pieces at Ground Floor Theater in March of 2020 called So Lucky. And she totally got wrapped up in it. We had to cancel her second half of the show. So I'm really happy to see that she's working and involved with New Manifest.
Yes. Sandy's amazing. I will also say that we do have a podcast called the New Manifest Theater Podcast, and we highlighted all of our playwrights. So feel free to check that out.
Right,
our
which
podcast
I just,
is available wherever.
Yeah, I just listened to the Sandy Lam interview, who was interviewed by Evan McQuaid, the incomparable Evan McQuaid, and it is a lot of fun. And that's something that you do weekly, your podcast.
It's more based around a project. So I won't put it out there that it's weekly. Right now we do have it pretty much weekly because the lead up to MiniFest.
Wonderful. And when is MiniFest this year?
October 13th through the 16th. It'll be online at 7 p.m. each night.
Right. And for those of us listening here, we pre-record this. So that actually begins tonight.
Tonight.
And where will folks go to get information and tickets?
Yeah, you can go to newmanifesttheater.org. Newmanifest.org. What am I saying? I don't even know our website.
It's newmanifest.org.
Yeah, our ticket link is available on our main homepage.
Great. And can they also, is this also on Now Playing Austin and therefore atxtheater.org?
It is, in fact. Great. And we also have a Facebook event. So, you know, anywhere you find information.
Lots of places. So that's great. And I'm very excited to see this year's piece and also the panels, which are just look wonderful. And what are your plans for next year? Do you plan to go back to doing it live?
Yeah, we really, really hope to do it live again. Right now we are in the process of planning our 2022 season. Hopefully we'll have a full production as part of that as well.
Wonderful. And what are, I should have asked this earlier. How does one, how do you select your playwrights and directors and stuff for the MiniFest?
Yeah. So our playwriting submissions are always open. We normally put out a call in the spring for new submissions and kind of what we're planning to do for that year's MiniFest. We take submissions from there. It's always open. And then we choose our director and cast from our ensemble of artists.
Wonderful. And you can see a list and pictures of all those people at newmanifest.org. Simone Alexander, thank you so much for joining us here at Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you, Simone.
Of course. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Nicole.
Under the roller coaster next to the jungle ride. Right of the caterpillar, left of the
Okay, are you happy that I'm playing that song?
I was just about to say, because you're playing my favorite Candor Net musical, The Rink.
Yes, you. God, yes, I did.
Love that music.
And that is
it's a Nick Mayo's one of his favorites too, though I can't just say it's mine.
I'm gonna just jump out on a limb and say it's probably several people's favorite.
It is. It's Paul Casapod's also. I know a few people whose favorite it is, but yeah.
So I know. Wow. See, so let's talk about what's going on here locally in Austin, Texas. And I, on Monday night, went out to the Vortex to hear the nominations for the 2020-21 season Biden Payne nominations. Which is very interesting because, you know, there wasn't a lot of live productions, only just a few. But certainly the biggest nominee in this was the Vortex, and that is, they were so prolific. They never stopped.
They were shaking. They were moving and shaking the whole darn time. That Bonnie and Melissa were making stuff happen.
They were doing crazy things. So I'm just going to jump through the categories. I'm not going to really talk about who was nominated. There was a lot of, I heard David Jarrett Productions got a lot of nominations. Penfold got a lot of nominations. Deaf Austin Theater got a whole bunch of nominations. Ground Floor Theater received 16 nominations. So there's a lot of stuff here. But some of the...
I mean, couldn't Ground Floor have done more? 16? Only 16?
You know what? Oddly enough, that was low on the big folks. That was only...
Which is so bananas, because I think it's amazing.
That was two shows. I should say that in that mix, I got nominated as a performer, which that'll never happen again.
Well, I mean, you did perform. You told it very, very, very...
And, oh, I know. I'm not saying that
story.
I didn't. I got
great.
Nominated. So here's just the categories. Digital theater edited... Digital audio, digital improvised. Oh, I'm scrolling. Oh my God, lots of digital Oh, no, I must have missed something. Because it's not showing me some stuff. There was live theater in there. Lots of different things. And I do have to say that I'm just going to be selfish and say that Patty Neftivin of Ground Floor Theater was nominated for Best Director. So that's good. Excellent. But of the live performances, the nominees were basically it was every live performance that took place. So it was Annie Jump in the Library of Heaven over at the Vortex, Bring It On mm-hmm. the Musical with Summer Stock Austin, Much mm-hmm. Ado About Nothing, Young Shakespeare. Young Shakespeare, mm-hmm. by the way, got loads of nominations.
Well, you know what? I love those little Young Shakespeare.
Yeah, I know so. You do. Rainfall Special
hip, on hip, Me. Hooray!
Yes. Rainfall Special on Me, Ground Floor Theater, and Wildcraft with Bottle Alley Theater and the Vortex. Those were the live ones that were nominated. So I do have to say that the Kate Meehan and the Beeyed and Payne Committee put on a nice event. I do enjoy it. So, and I don't have the
How
date.
How was it attended?
You know, it's hard to tell because it was at the Butterfly Bar. But it was attended, I'm going to say it was attended very well because as I left, I got there relatively early. But it was Old Home Week. So I saw our, you know, friend of the show, Ginger Morris, and co-host replacement, Adam Roberts. There was all the groups from David Jarrett's group. Obviously, the Vortex people were there. I sat with Melissa Vogt of Vortex. There was a lot of people there. Matrix Kilgore was there. And I should say locally, we should talk about Matrix Kilgore just took a job with the Texas Commission on the Arts. He's the newest program manager there. So that's good news for him.
Loving that Matrix, making things happen.
Now, I haven't seen this. I'm going to try to go next week. But last weekend, Rapunzel opened. Jeremy Rashad Brown wrote this. And this is the third iteration, and it's very different. We had Rapunzel.
Oh, I was about to say, it is different. Okay.
It's different. This was directed by India Wilmot. And Saul Paul, who did all the music last time, is not involved in this one. So it's evidently very different.
Interesting.
But it is playing weekends. It is it's a 47-minute show, folks. So it's very it's a tasting menu.
Yes, it's like short, sweet, and to the point.
Yep. So let's go back to our list of things to talk about. You sent me this and I saw the video. This is an actor actually I should probably say a supernumerary died in Russia during a performance of, okay, I've got to find, I have to find the article.
I forgot what the show was, but my mouth was on the floor.
It's called Sadko by the composer Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov. And evidently a set piece came down and fell on him.
But it wasn't on stage, I don't believe. I believe it
no,
was when
I saw the
he
video.
Got into the wing. Oh, wait a minute. There's a video?
There's a video, and it's taken from, like, the back of the house, so you don't see. I mean, it's not graphic in any way. You see this set piece come down from the grid, and then the person that posted the film put a little circle around it. You know how they do where they show you where it's happening? And it was upstage center.
Oh, I thought it was him exiting. From what I thought it was him exiting and the piece hit him. So the gentleman was an understudy, if I am correct.
He was a supernumerary.
Okay.
He was a super, which is opera speak for an extra.
Yep. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And then they stopped the show immediately and canceled it, of course.
Well, yeah.
Like, I can't believe he died. I mean, it brought me back to when Bret Michaels got taken out during the Tonys by the set piece and how lucky Bret Michaels is to be alive.
Right. Well, so then people that poo-poo our industry is not dangerous should take note.
Well, I mean, obviously they didn't see Spider-Man turn off the dark.
That's true.
I just was mortified by that, though. I was like, OMG.
Me too. I mean, that's it's frightening. And we do think we're in a, you know, we do think we're in an industry that is and I would say it is, relative to many other industries, very, very, very safe. And things like this that happen, Spider-Man turn off the dark notwithstanding, is very rare that these kinds of injuries happen to that extent. But it's how...
Well, I mean, Little Mermaid had one. Remember the boat? The
I know, but what I'm saying is it's very, very, very rare.
It is.
It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So, yeah. So let's switch subjects to something a little bit more lighter and fair. Did you see this... it's a company called Creative Goods is selling merch via your smartphone now. So from your seat, you can buy merch and pick it up in the lobby.
No, but I'm not surprised by that. I mean,
well, it makes a lot of sense.
Remember how we were at the Majestic being Matilda years ago, and we could order all of our drinks and do everything from our seat. So
yeah, and I think
merch was only a matter of time.
Well, and I hope that continues. I mean, a lot of these innovations have been put forward because of COVID-19. But I'm hoping things like a lot of this online stuff that you do with your phone continues on. For instance, I like getting menus in restaurants on my phone.
See, I don't mind the QR codes and getting the menus in the restaurants that way, but
agreed.
I am not going to keep entering my credit card information onto my phone and purchase things. So that's not happening in this world with Nicole.
Oh, okay. Well, that is certainly within your right and makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So now, did you see Cicely Strong, Saturday Night Live star, Emmy winner, and Schmigadoon star?
Yeah, I mean, like, this seemed like a no-brainer after Schmigadoon. Why weren't you going to let this woman come on stage and do some more?
Yeah, so she's actually going to do a production of Jane Wagner's Search of Signs for Intelligent Life in the Universe. If that sounds familiar to folks, it was very popular. Lily Tomlin did it in 1985.
Yeah, it seems like a perfect piece for Cicely and her zaniness. It just was like, I was like, what a great idea.
Yeah. And this is being done at the Shed. And I have to say that I have to show my ignorance. You probably know of this performing arts place, but I didn't. I had to look it up. Are you familiar with the Shed?
You know, it's funny. When I heard it, I was like, God, I haven't heard the Shed in so long, to be quite honest with you. But,
well, it's relatively new. I mean, it's within the past 20 years that it came into being.
I was about to say at least 20 years, but I don't think we heard about it all the time.
Well, the Shed is this amazing...
It's a good 10 years.
The Shed is this amazing art complex downtown, and it has mm-hmm. this... it's got several different... It's basically a cultural center. It's got performance spaces, and it's got galleries and things like that. But one of the most incredible things, and on their website, you can see a video of this. If you can imagine a modern New York City building with that big plaza in front of the building, you know, in front of the street. So there's usually oftentimes a big plaza out in front.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have this shell that comes out and rolls out on big wheels and turns
Isn't
that
it cool?
plaza into an indoor space.
So cool.
It is amazing.
So cool.
Yeah. So I had no idea. It's at Hudson Yards specifically, I would encourage folks to go check out theshed.org and look at that building. I mean, my jaw has dropped onto the floor right now.
We need to get you one of those little shelves for the parking lot at ground floor.
I agree. That would have saved
right?
a lot of problems during the pandemic.
Yes, it would have. I'm going to find us a benefactor.
No good. But that looks like a lot of fun with Cecily Strong and Search for Intelligent Life in the Universe. Did you see it ever?
No, I did. I mean, I've seen a lot of clips and seen some of the online, but I didn't. And I kick myself all the time that I didn't go and see it.
Okay. Lee Silverman is directing it. She directed Lifespan of a Fact, which, by the way, is going to be done here locally by Jarrett Productions relatively soon. And she also directed Violet. And I have to say, both of those shows I was not terribly fond of.
I was about to say, I don't think you were terribly fond of either of them. But was it the direction or was it the show, like the actual?
I think it was the show. I mean, I know Lifespan of the Fact was seemed to be directed just fine. But I just the show and Cherry. Oh, God, what's her name? Cherry.
Winner? No.
Anyway, I did not like her at all.
Oh, bananas. That's going to drive me nuts that we'll I can't think of her last name.
You and I should not be on a show together because neither of us, we both have this memory issue.
Well, the problem is that I'm like Wikipedia and then you put me on air and it's like, it's in the library, brain library. It's checked out and someone else is using it. They'll return it as soon as we get off air. You do realize that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. I get the texts. did you see the movie Hidden Figures?
I did. I don't know how I feel about what you're about to talk about, to be honest with you. It's such a good movie, and I'm like, really? But, you know, I've been wrong about things before that I've been like, I don't know.
Why don't you tell our listeners what I'm about to talk about? Why don't you talk about it?
They're making Hidden Figures into, I believe it's a musical, right?
Yes,
Not just a stage play, but an actual musical.
A musical.
To me is what I think got me.
Not only that, a Disney musical.
Yeah, so I just, and again, wonderful movie. I could watch that movie over and over. Just an amazing story. Should have been told sooner. An amazing cast. How do you top all that in a musical? But I
agree. One of the podcasts I was listening to this morning, the two people that were on the air were going, sounds good. And the other person said, you know what? Don't need to see it. The movie was done.
It was enough.
The movie was great. So I'm on that. I'm on there too. But like you, I would be very happy to be pleasantly surprised.
So would I. I mean, like they told me they were making Rocky into a musical, and I said, "Why?" And you know how I'm obsessed with Rocky Doc musical.
I know.
And just same with Back to the Future. I was like, "Why?" And now I'm fascinated by it.
Except the difference.
I hope someone proves me wrong.
Well, but the difference between those two and Hidden Figures. Hidden Figures is an amazing piece about a true story.
Important women.
Exactly. And the other two are stories. And I think there's a difference.
There is. It's another added element. But again, it still falls in the category. It was done so well before. Why are you messing with it?
Yeah. And
a musical on top of it, not even a straight play.
I know. It seemed to me if you were going to do it, I would not do it into a musical. But I have to say that, you know, after reading or seeing the movie of The Band's Visit, would never think to make that a musical. After reading the graphic novel Fun Home, never think of making that a musical. So who knows?
Touche. So, I mean, I hope someone is proves me wrong and I'm pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
But I will be watching this closely.
Hear, hear.
Hear,
hear. Turtle Island, by the way, is the native name for the United States of America.
Oh, look at you pulling out these fun facts.
Well, we've learned this in getting our acknowledgments for Ground Floor Theater. So we don't really have time to talk about this, but I just want to say Osmond's the Musical.
Okay, so I left.
Don't have time to talk about it.
It's in UK touring.
Yeah, don't have time to talk about it, but that's all I want to say is Osmond's the Musical, because I want to make sure we have time to talk about Jesus Christ Superstar 50 years later.
Today was the opening day of Jesus Christ Superstar 50 years later. And may I add, two nights ago on Jeopardy, Superstar was one of the questions.
Yep.
Who was Tim Rice?
And we should say that before it was a musical on Broadway 50 years ago. A year and a half prior to that, it was a concept album. And then half a year prior to opening on Broadway, it went on a concert tour before it opened on Broadway.
Still one of the greatest musicals and albums, and gosh, I love it.
And the woman that played Mary Magdalene, Yvonne Elliman, she was 18-year-old singer. She was from Hawaii. Evidently, Andrew Lloyd Webber saw her in a London nightclub, and he ran up to her and he said, "You're my Mary Magdalene." And she was.
Well, you know, he was only 17 years old. What was he doing in a London nightclub?
He was 22.
No, he and Tim Rice were 17 and 18.
When they wrote it. At this point, when they were casting it, he was 22.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you meant from, like, the concept. I thought you.
No, this was when they were. This
I'm like, no, how is he in a club?
Yeah, no. So, yeah, so the concert was in 71. So I did not know this. You probably did. Tom O'Horgan directed the original piece. And that almost didn't happen. And in theory, it might have been a good thing because neither Andrew Lloyd Webber or Tim Rice liked the direction at all. But Andrew Lloyd Webber missed a telegram from Hal Prince, who wanted to direct it.
OMG.
Could you imagine?
Could you imagine? And I love that you're like, missed a telegram.
You know, what's a telegram?
I know what it is. I'm just laughing at that.
Yeah. So the reviews were mixed. The Times didn't like it at all. Clive Barnes panned it. With regards to the direction,
I think he might have been wrong.
Yeah, he might have been wrong. With regards to the direction, Andrew Lloyd Webber called the direction brash and vulgar. And he said that the opening night was the worst night of his life.
Can I just tell you something? Andrew Lloyd Webber has been on fire lately with all of his interviews and his quotes.
True.
And saw what he said about cats?
You know what? I need to get this next piece out because we have to actually go. We're running a little late again.
Okay.
Did you know what the whole show is based on? I'll tell you.
Jesus Christ Superstar?
Yeah, the show is based on a Bob Dylan lyric. And the lyric was, did Judas Iscariot have God on his side? It was from the 1964 song With God on Our Side. So it's interesting because, as you know, it's really the story of Judas in the Jesus
Correct.
Story.
I was like, it's Judas's story, not Jesus.
Correct. Well, we've run out of time. Amazing.
Can we pick up with Andrew Lloyd Webber next week and his one-liners? Because I've got a lot of good ones.
Sure, we'll do that.
Okay.
Next up on Co-op Radio is Texas Music Mixtape with DJ Mark. And Nicole and I are going to be back next week looking at what's happening offstage and on the air. We're going to go away with a little bit of Jesus Christ Superstar. And in honor of Nicole, this is Could We Start Again, Please?
Thank you. I love you, Lisa. Till next week.
Till next week. Bye, everybody.
I've been living to see you. Dying to see you, but it shouldn't be like this. This was unexpected. What do I do now? Could we start again, please?